You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, Goat Flippers? It is your host, Lurk. Thanks for checking out this episode of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast, the number one hardcore slash metal and everything in between show on the internet. Man, you know, it's been kind of a busy week. We got some news that Korn finished writing a new album. The Devil Wears Prada debuted a new single off their EP. And the biggest news of all is Madball had that huge concert in New York City where like 2,000 to 3,000 people showed up, and now they're being investigated by park officials. Well, we'll see what happens with all that, but for one, I'm kind of glad shows are coming back. I just hope that they're safe and everyone's precautious and all that other stuff, but I think it's time that we get back to some kind of, you know, not normalcy or whatnot, but we enjoy some things, and I think it's time that we enjoy safely shows. So that's just my two cents. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, please go ahead and give us a follow, a like, or a review, or rating, or whatever you can to help out the podcast. Heck, share it with a friend. Those things help us out with the algorithm of the podcast industry. And if you're a returning listener, well then, hella thumbs up to you, my friend. Thanks for coming back. Visit lambgoat.com for everything that has to do with metal and hardcore and everything in between. Find us on social media. You can give us a like on Facebook, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at lambgoat. We also have a YouTube page where you can find all of these interviews in video format, plus our other bonus Lambgoat content. Make sure you subscribe to the channel and hit that alert bell so you always get notified when we upload content. If you're listening to this podcast on Spotify, you can also search Lambgoat on Spotify and find all of our monthly playlists. And if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host, on social media, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity, LURKCITY. And on this episode of the podcast, I am joined by Dreamshade's guitarist, Fella. And if you're unfamiliar with Dreamshade, they're based out of Switzerland. They used to be a death metal kind of project turned into a metalcore project, so a little bit of everything in between. However, they just released a new album, A Pale Blue Dot, a couple months ago. And if you're interested in winning a free copy of Dreamshade's album, go to my Twitter account, LurkCity, find the tweet that I've posted this episode link on, go ahead and give it a like and a retweet, and I will randomly pick a winner, or a few winners, I'm sorry, for the album, and I will ship them out to you. Best of luck.
Oh, yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh, yeah, this is stuff. Oh, no. Oh, no. Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome back to the Van Flip Podcast. Here we are again. I don't know what number show this is, but I feel like it has been a lot. We've done so many in the last couple weeks here that you're hearing this much later, unfortunately. But I am joined with a international metalcore band person today. Fella from the band Dreamshade is joining me via Skype, or not Skype, but Zoom, much like all the other guests have been joining, unfortunately, in this last year. But you're doing it logistically because you're across the world in Switzerland right now. But you guys, Dreamshade just came out with a new album, Pale Blue Dot. We actually, if you're listening to this, you probably already heard in the intro for the podcast, but we're giving out a few copies. So I don't know how we're going to do that just yet, but you already heard how you can win a copy. So just do that and win a copy. But how you doing, fella? How's it going, man?
What's up, everyone? It's great to be with you. I'm doing great, honestly. It's been some really busy days, but it's been great all around. So what about you?
Pretty good. You know, like I just said, I've been busy as well, not just with this, but with other things in life. Just like I'm as busy as you can possibly be during a pandemic.
Right.
I feel like I'm more busy than I was pre-pandemic, but you know, It's pretty nuts. It's been nuts for you guys because, like we just mentioned, you guys just released another album. So congratulations on that. How is that? Like, how's it feel to finally get it out? And how's the, you know, fan base been taking it in?
Dude, I feel so relieved. Like, I was stressing so hard before the release day because, you know, the days that come before our release day are always the worst because you are very close to it and you don't really know what's going to happen, if the fans are going to like it or not, if you're going to be, critiqued somehow all the time. You don't know which songs are gonna, you know, perform better. And I have to say, we're super excited because we've been getting the best feedback that we've ever gotten so far. Yeah. So it's been really, really good.
It's a great album. I mean, I got it in an advanced copy of it, you know, digitally weeks ago. So I've been listening to it off and on for the last couple of weeks. But you know, I just got these CDs in, so I actually took one out and put one in the car and drove around with it for a little while. Because nice. It sounds so different than streaming it, obviously. But yeah, it's a great album, and it's so different than like what you guys are not normally, but what you guys originally what you guys were originally doing so much like back in the day when you first formed, like 2006 time. So how did you guys get to where you are now, like sound wise? Because it seems like, and I hate using this term, but like a more mature, more together sound. And obviously that has happened. Like, you guys have been a group for a longer period of time, and you know, you guys are well aware of how each other works and how each other writes, but like, has anything else come into play as like, as far as like the transitional sound that you guys have done over the years?
So yeah, when we started back in the day, we were just kids trying to, you know, maybe get super close to what we loved to listen at the time. But we never really decided on what type of genre of rock and metal we were about to play. So we already knew from the beginning that every record was going to sound a little bit different. So what we really worked on throughout the years is to keep our songwriting very trademarky, let's say. Like, you can change, in our opinion at least, we can change type of music a little bit from a record to another, but keeping, you know, our trademark type of songwriting, because you, in our opinion at least, you can instantly hear that it's Dream Shit, even if some records are more rock, some are more, I don't know, with pop inserts or electronic music, you can still hear that it's Dream Shit. So that's what's changed with time, but also stayed the same since the beginning.
I don't know if maybe you guys kind of got into the more progressive sounds because you guys just became more proficient with your, you know, instruments, and like, that's just how it kind of, you kind of just morphed into writing that way, like a more progressive kind of metalcore sound. Obviously you guys do, you have clean vocals, you have not clean vocals. So what are some of the things that you added into this record that are different than the previous records outside of your discography?
It's the first record where there are two singers that sing. One is me, and I play guitar and do some inserts with vocals. And there are way more often that they've ever been before in the other records. So we have two different type of vocals, two different singers actually. But what's new, I guess, it's the rapping and you know, some other styles of vocals that we never used. There is more electronics and synths. And I guess that overall, I mean, maybe we were more prog in the first days because we were trying to, you know, showcase all of our talents in the first records, because right. We felt like metal was that at that time. But somehow we learned to write better songs, focusing on each part of the song and make it shine with the right instrument, mm-hmm. one at a time. So that's what changed, in my opinion. Maybe it's just more consistent right now.
Mm-hmm. Like, how much?
I guess you could say.
How much do other bands like influence you? Like how much does the sound of the sound of the genre or other bands, like what other bands are doing? Like, how much does that influence you guys as like writing? And do you guys take that into consideration? Do you think like? Well, because you said the synths and other elements you've added in and stuff like that. Like, do you see what people are doing and think like that's a cool idea? Or is it something that just comes natural that you guys just were like, oh, I feel like a synth would go well here. I don't really care that the other people in the genre are doing it also.
I would say the second. I mean, we just go with the flow, and whatever we think is good music, it's gonna be on the record. So honestly, we don't really look at other metal bands, at least, or rock bands that of course, we like many of them, but it's not like a focus for us. It's not something that we draw inspiration from all the time. We tend actually to look at other music genres way more than metal and rock, because that's what helps us, you know, open our mind. So we've been doing that for many, many years now. And I guess it's also part of our style, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely can tell that there are definitely other genre influences, especially on this album, you know, scattered and sprinkled all over. So it's definitely enjoyable, and you do it in such a way that it is enjoyable. When did you guys, where did the rapping come from? What was that? You know, was that something you guys wanted to do, or was that just something you wanted to try out?
It's something that I already did on my own, because I'm a big fan of hip hop in general, but I've always been, because my sister, when we were kids, she was really into it. And those were the first records that I had bought with my own, you know, small amount of money at the time. So that's part of my influence. I gotta say, I listened to a lot of rap, and it's even being it, you know, old school or new school. And I like many artists in that genre. And I think that we tried this with some of the older songs, but it was not really, you know, thought about. It just happened. And then the guys in the band really pushed me for that, because they felt like it was something that could turn the band a little bit, you know, more fresh somehow. And I said, okay, so we did write some of the songs thinking about that for this record, and it worked.
Yeah.
I really like doing it, and it's great to, you know, to spice it up live, where you can have, you know, a set list that is very diverse during a show, and just have fun, honestly. Right. We just want to have fun when playing live, and it's very cool, you know, to have this dynamic type of set lists.
Well, you're speaking to a guy who grew up on the rap rock nu metal craze, so like,
nice.
By all means, I'm here for most of that, so I'm a big fan of it. What are some of your what like you said, you listen to a lot of old school and new school rap. What are some of your artists that you currently are listening to a lot of right now in that genre, like rap and hip hop?
Of course, the old school artists that I still listen to and I really enjoy still, and I feel like they were visionaries somehow, are for sure, you know, Public Enemy, Biggie Smalls, the Beastie Boys, Run DMC. I listen to a lot of that era, especially. Also Tupac. I love Tupac. I would never, you know, I can't draw that many influences from the lyrics, because it doesn't match our band. It doesn't match our personalities. But the style is something that I really enjoy, and I always did. And to me, it's just great to listen to those albums like I used to listen to them 20 years ago, and still feel like they are great. And the new school, I mean, I really like G-Eazy. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but
yeah,
he's like
more like
super.
He's like a hip hop, but he's also like a pop guy. You know, he was dating that Halsey girl for a while. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm familiar.
But he's really technical and really, really good. Nice flow.
That's cool.
But there are so many artists that I like, also in other genres. So it's very. I do a lot of research, and I always try to find somebody that, you know, makes me go wow in every genre, being it, I don't know, jazz or bossa nova or rap or whatever. I just like good music. And if an artist, I find it good, that's going to be enough for me.
Okay.
I don't really care about the genre.
Nice. Speaking of hip hop and whatnot, I'm sitting here looking at you and I'm like, dang, he kind of looks like, I don't know if you're familiar with the independent hip hop artist, Russ, but I'm getting a Russ vibe.
I've been getting some messages about this, but I wasn't familiar with him at the time. Then I looked him up, but I'm not really familiar with the music though.
It's just like an independent guy. He puts his own stuff out, and he's kind of like taken over, you know, the internet or whatever.
Is he good?
I mean, I used to listen to a lot of his earlier stuff, like 4 years ago or whatever I found out about him, but I didn't keep up with him. So, but okay. I just know that his trajectory has gone insanely, you know, he's insanely wow. huge, but he's not mainstream still. So, okay. It's good. It's, I don't know. It's definitely like a newer style of hip hop too. So
nice.
It's he has a different way of doing it, but yeah, it's decent.
Gonna check him out.
Definitely. I mean, you can go to you can go as Russ on Halloween and costume parties and stuff like that. It'd be great.
Right.
So how long did it take you guys to write the record, and was it like written pre-COVID or during COVID, or how long has it been? Because it was a couple of years since your previous release, so I didn't know how long you've been working on it.
So we've been touring a lot until the end of 2019. And then that's where we started thinking about doing a record, and we didn't have the songs already. So we figured that the more efficient way to do this for us, that we're really slow during the writing process, you know, honestly, is to set a deadline and just by that deadline have a record ready. That's what we did when we came back home after the last Asian tour at the end of 2019. So we came home, we started working on the songs, and in 5 months, we finished the songwriting and the recording. So it started before the pandemic and it went through it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we finished the record in March, April. Yeah.
Of 2020.
2020.
Oh, so you guys have been kind of sitting on it for a better part of like an entire year.
An entire year because of the COVID, because we were supposed to release it right after, but our calculation didn't include the pandemic. So everything stopped. The music business was like still trying to find ways to, you know, to work around it. And then when we understood that this was going to be way longer than we thought, that everybody thought, mm-hmm. We decided to just postpone the release to find the right, you know, moment to do it, because it wouldn't make sense to do it before when nobody really knew how this pandemic was developing.
Who makes the choice on that? Like because you guys waited a year, so obviously you saw other albums come out, other bands releases, and saw either the successes or the failures of that. So like.
Yeah.
Who ultimately decides that release date? Is that something that you guys talk with the label, the management, or is it just like on you altogether?
It's us and the management. Absolutely. We felt like, okay, so many bands that already scheduled their release before this, you know, had a hard hit because they already set everything up for the release. Then the pandemic happened in between the things, and then they had to release in a moment where you were already, you know, thinking about promoting the record, touring or whatever, and then had to cancel everything. And that's what kept us, you know, waiting a little bit to think about it and just, you know, try to work around it and to find some way to make it work at the end of the day. Then we saw that touring was not happening for anybody for a year. And then just felt this moment where we were like, okay, these songs really represent this moment in time. They are about, you know, some of the things that we are experiencing right now. It wouldn't make sense to release them later than this. Mm-hmm. So we set a date and it was March and we went for it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's done well. Do you think it's done better because of the pandemic? Because a lot of people do think that, and I'm not calling Dreamshade a smaller band, but like for a lot of like underground metalcore bands, they are having more successful releases because people are just like, you know, listening to music more because they're stuck inside all over the world and such like that. So, do you think the release is doing better because of that, or do you wish you could have like released it traditionally and like toured and just like grinded it out over a slow period of time?
I really don't know about that, honestly. I mean, the album just came out 2 days ago and it's hard to tell, I would say, but it's doing pretty well for us, maybe because There was a lot of attention, and you know, people have been waiting for so long for the next record. And when it finally arrived, maybe now they also have the time to listen to it, and you know, the mindset to do it. Maybe some songs they just need it right now. And I guess that might be a part of it, of course.
Yeah, you know, because obviously people are sitting at home with more time to spend with it too. It's not just like their daily life is going on and they're just listening to a song here, a song there, a couple songs in the car, or, you know, a couple songs walking to class or going to the job or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They can put it on and listen to it like in full multiple times if need to.
Absolutely. That's what I'm doing, at least. I don't know. I guess there are many other people, you know, are doing this.
Yeah, I'm definitely listening to a lot more music. Just, I mean, being in Lambgoat, I want to be more apt to like the stuff coming out, be more as to like, because, you know, with this podcast, not only do I want to interview like huge bands, like I just told you, we had the Melvins on right before here.
Yeah.
But I also want to give, you know, the platform to smaller bands that more people should probably listen to or that are making noise in the underground. You know, I want to, because there's two different audiences. There's a newer school of metalcore and there's like the older school of metalcore that Lambgoat, you know, was around in and stuff like that. So a lot of our audience, unfortunately, is more like my age. I don't know how old you are, but you know, we're upper 30s or, you know, 40s. So, it's good to like have a balance, you know, and it's good to see.
Absolutely.
It's good to see all that. How is it for you guys over there in Europe as far as like touring and stuff like that? Because you guys are obviously in a different, you know, region of the world in general, but you're connected. You were saying something like the Asian tour. Like, how often does like an Asian tour happen for you guys? Is it relatively like something that's just like for us, like driving to the West Coast? You know what I mean? Is that what it's like for you?
Not really. I mean, Asian tours are hard, and it's something that we have been building for the last 5 or 6 years. So for us, it went well for us. So we do headlining tours there, but it took some time to get there. And we were also very lucky because we had an audience that we didn't know about in China and Taiwan and Japan. And that's been there already for years before going the first time in 2015. So I wouldn't say it's like driving to the next state, but... And also, there are not many bands where I'm from that do this. Honestly, nobody. And
like an untapped market out there, the Asian market,
especially China. It's not very explored for many bands. Right in the you know, last years, many other bands, also American bands, went there. The first time that we went there, it was 2015, and we played some shows with Killswitch Engage and some others with The Word Alive. And also other bands, I guess. And it was sick. It was the first time for us, first time for The Word Alive also. And it went great. So we kept going there every year and a half, something like that.
Nice. But like, is it easier for you guys to what I meant was like logistically, like obviously it's probably difficult to break through into a different country where they speak a completely different language. But like... you know, logistically speaking, is it easy for you guys to do tours like that? Because you guys are connected to different continents, whereas it might be more difficult to travel to, like, I don't know, Australia or, you know, America.
Yeah, it's pretty hard because you got a tour, you know, just traveling with the plane. So it's flights, flights, flights. Every show is a flight.
Okay.
Because it's a very big territory and it's not like you drive from show to show, at least in Asia, because there are many countries. And so I'd say that it's way different when you tour Europe, when you do, you know, back-to-back tours and shows in Europe, you drive right after the show and then arrive to the next venue.
Yeah, more traditional style of travel.
Yeah, traditional. That's what maybe, you know, American bands are more used to when they tour stateside, you know.
How often do you guys make it a point to come over, you know, pre-pandemic? How often were you guys coming over to the States?
We just went once. Yes, once. And never happened again because we don't have an agent there. That's what we're trying to get right now. we would really love to tour the United States, because I feel like we feel like it's our biggest market and it's still unexplored fully for us. So that's something that we're going to try to definitely do in the future.
So it was easier for you to book multiple Asian tours than it is to come to the United States.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, our situation is the weirdest ever, because whenever we talk with other bands when we tour, like, they don't understand what's happening here. So we come from this very small town in southern Switzerland, and there is no music business right here, right? So when we started, there were no bands that were touring. So we didn't even know how it's done, you know, how this works. And we struggled to find, you know, record labels. We had to fly over all over Europe to you know, have managements and record label and then booking agencies. It's been very weird for us, because it felt like we were getting nowhere sometimes, and nobody was recognizing us as a Swiss band or an Italian band, because we live on the border, and it's very weird. It's a very weird feeling, because it's just, we are a minority in Switzerland, because we speak Italian, and mm-hmm. it's just 400,000 people in this, you know, very small area. And up north, we have the Alps. So we are even divided in our own country.
Right.
So that made, you know, the difference for us. And also, it was so hard to get out of here and start, you know, touring internationally. And I don't know. It's the other bands, when we explain this, they always ask us, what's the deal with this? just where we're from. And it's just weird, because so, like, nobody else do this.
Basically, I guess you would just, if you had a connection with like a US agent, you know, booking person, you could, you know, get over here easier. So how long, when was that time? Sorry for blanking on that, but when did you come to the States? What year was that?
2013 or 14.
Okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
How long, because you guys started in 2006, how long was it until you started like really being serious with the band? And not saying that you weren't serious from the get-go, but like, you know, because you were talking about how it was a struggle to, you know, start off, because it's no scene really kind of where around you're at. Yeah. But like, so how did you guys get started, and when did it become like a more serious thing, like touring and records and stuff like that?
So from 2006 to 2008 was just, you know, figuring out how we were going to do this and what type of music we were trying to do. Learning to songwrite, because we didn't ever write songs before that. I mean, at this level at least. But we were all underage. We were all super, super young. And, you know, 15, 16. And it's until 2008, that's when our first EP was released. Until then, it wasn't like, it was serious for us, but it wasn't something that was building. Then we recorded that EP and released it on online, because it was MySpace time. So we had this web store done by us, and we started selling internationally from there. We, you know, had printed a couple thousand copies of that, and it was sold out, because we started, you know, shipping everywhere. And that's when we started, you know, going to European festivals, doing contests, and our fifth show as a band was already a European big festival. It was Metal Camp in Slovenia.
Nice.
So we were already traveling, but you know, most of the band was underage still. So that's when it actually started. I would say 2008, and from there, slowly, you know, understanding how
everything
in the music business. Yeah.
Well, so how do you guys expect to, you know, overcome that hurdle of the booking problem? Did you guys ever think of like doing it yourself? Because you guys seem like, because of your start, it was a lot of you might have been more do it yourself kind of situations. But
yeah.
Did you ever think about it? Maybe like doing it yourself, or like tacking on with a band that's already, you know, like, I'm sure you've made some connections with American bands or U.S. bands over the years. I don't know, maybe if, you know, like, hey, Word Alive or Killswitch Engage or, you know, whomever you might have played with elsewhere.
That would
like,
be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you come bring us out, you know?
Yeah, that would be awesome. And we did think about that. We did, you know, have some connections with many bands over the years. And it's just, you know, never happened that way until now. So maybe it's going to happen soon in the future. We will definitely work more on that now that we have a record that we know that it's going to be, you know, perceived better in the United States. And we were about to do that when we had an American label. It was Artery Recordings. Mm-hmm. And then they sold the catalog to Warner after our release. So we needed to wait again to do another record to, you know, try to explore that.
Did you release...
But I mean,
go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. Finish what you were saying.
But yeah, that's what happened. So we the previous record, Vibrant, 2016, it was released and then the record label was sold. So that was the plan to tour America at that time, and that it couldn't happen because of that.
So were you not taken on as when the label was bought by Warner? Was the band not taken on the Warner roster, or did they just...
I think they just bought the catalog, so every band that was on there... That's what I think, but I'm not really sure about this. But
they're not really working with the bands, or just using... Right. They're just... Okay, for like, whether it be like financial reasons or just to purchase the catalog. Okay, so you guys don't have any attachment, per se, to Warner Brothers, other than them having the rights to those albums?
Correct.
Okay, so... It was basically back to square one then. So who are you putting the Pale Blue Dot, who'd you put it out with in America?
So that record or this one?
A Pale Blue Dot, the current one.
It's we are doing the
DIY.
Label right
okay,
now.
Okay.
That's the first time that we've ever done this because we've been with record labels for 10 years straight. And we signed with Universal as a Spine Firm in 2010, mm-hmm. and then we started releasing full length after that with them. And right now we saw this opportunity to do this on our own and actually, you know, try to make it work because we felt like for many years we didn't see any of what was happening with our records and where this was going, and we didn't have nobody was, you know, sending us statements and stuff. So it was kind of weird, you know, to work so hard for something that you can't see how it's going.
Right.
And we felt like it was harder for us than for our other bands. So we saw this opportunity with the pandemic and, you know, didn't really feel like any of the record labels that were interested in the record were going to make a difference for us. So we figured just let's try this. And I have to say it's working very well.
Yeah.
And we are really surprised because we know it's been a very hard job to do because right now we're doing the artist side and also the management and record label and, you know, promotion and shopping and whatever. So it is very hard. You got to put a lot of effort and time in it and money. But at least you can control everything.
Right. And you get to see the back end, behind the curtain and stuff like that. How much of that is difficult because you guys might not know exactly how everything is run behind the scenes because you weren't, you know, privy to all that. So how difficult is it to run some of those things?
It's not difficult because we've done this type of things on our own anyway, even when the record label was there. So... Mm. They were selling our records. That's true, but like, we did promote the shit out of it, and that's, in my opinion, why it kept working, even in those situations, and all the touring and everything. That's something that we did, and that we organized, and that people that really believe in the band helped us do, you know, mm-hmm. and.
But they still get a cut of all that stuff too, correct?
Not the touring though.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, right now, for us, it's working pretty well because we know where everything is going. We do get finally, you know, every statement from the previous record. So right now we have full control and we feel like we've done something good for ourselves and we can have control on our art and how it's managed. And that changes our whole perspective.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. That's great. How, how much of a decision was it to, you know, to do it yourself? Obviously because of the pandemic allotted you to, but like with the ease of the internet, like, was it something that you guys had like maybe previously thought about even when you were on Artery or other labels? Like, how long did you guys want to maybe possibly have everything in control of your, like, you know, in your hands?
We don't know how long we're going to do this, but we
did try. How long have you wanted to do it?
Ah, sorry. Yeah, we did try this with two previous singles before this record. And that was 2018 to 2019 and 20. Yes. So it's been 2 to 3 years.
Okay, cool.
That we're thinking about doing this. So that's why we were kind of ready to take this step. Because we felt like people who are interested in the band can really, you know, support us in the best way, just giving, you know, their support directly to the band.
Right.
That changes a lot.
Well, I think that mindset is changing in general. I think a lot more people are connecting with the band and
absolutely
knowing exactly like how much maybe their financial, you know, decisions of supporting the band actually do affect the band. I think especially now with the pandemic, but I thought even before a lot more people were buying merch of the bands directly from the band at the show or on the, you know, on the band's website in hopes that it probably goes to the band more often. But
yeah,
I think it's great that bands, and I've said this on this podcast many times, so it is whatever, but I think it's great that bands have had a way to kind of financially capitalize on, you know, even, you know, sitting down Q&A status and like, like a Patreon or like a fan club or like a, I think it's great that bands have capitalized on that. And I'm glad that, you know, we're at a time where it doesn't look like gimmicky because, you know, before it might've been gimmicky because we were,
I was going to say like back in the day, especially when you start and you don't know what you're doing, you have no idea how this works. And I mean, for us, it was even harder because we really had nobody to draw, you know, inspiration from or knowledge. And the record labels, when you start, do, I mean, they absolutely do their work fine because you don't have money when you start. You need, you know, the finances to produce records, videos, and touring and whatever. So absolutely, that's something that helps when you start because they put you out there. They put you on the map. And if you also do good music, you're going to stay there for a while. But if you already have an audience and it's been growing over the years and you can monitor that right now, I feel like if you're not a huge band that really needs that type of machine that goes behind the scene, you should, you know, use the power of your audience way more than we used to do it back in the day.
Yeah. Well, it's also easier to get an audience nowadays.
Absolutely.
But also I think a lot of it is because like, you know, you said a lot, the general public also didn't understand how the music industry worked. And I think the general public has a better knowledge of, well,
that's true.
I don't want to say general public, but like someone that may be into like underground music, whereas like maybe not people that are into pop music, they may not understand exactly how it works. But like, you know, people that are more dedicated into these niche genres are more interested in the business, I guess. So they would understand how like, oh, well, you know, it's still underground, but there's an underground, you know, dichotomy business that goes along with it too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are many bands that started doing this, honestly, and some of them are doing great. And I feel like if you are a smaller band, it can make sense because, you know, especially during the pandemic, we realized like, okay, CDs are not going to be sold anyway. Even before the pandemic, nobody's really selling, you know, physical CDs anymore. So you got the digital platforms. You got the videos and everything. If you're going to sell CDs, vinyls, or gadgets, or merchandise, or whatever, people just cannot go to stores during the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. So they're just going to order on the internet. So why can't we use that and just, you know, use one link to have people order stuff?
Right.
That's what we did. Because everybody was ordering stuff from Amazon or whatever all day, every day for 1 year right now.
Right.
Because nobody can go to the shop, right? You cannot go to shows even. Mm-hmm. So there's not really a big difference if you are willing to take this amount of work.
Right.
That is, you know, that is managing this thing.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's less gimmicky. And I guess before, you know, a casual fan would be like, well, this band is signed, so they obviously have money. You know, like there was like an idea of like all signed bands have got it going on. And, you know, it's so lame that they're out here asking for $5 per fan to like hang out and talk with them. But now, you know what I mean? I think now everyone kind of knows how, like, oh, well, streaming services don't pay. And like you said, physical copies don't necessarily sell as much as they have in the previous past. But, you know, I think the casual fan is more apt to give the band $5 or, you know, per month or more so and not think it's a gimmick because they understand, like, and more bands are doing it because obviously the times have pushed a lot of bands to think of like other income streams, you know, because touring and music is technically on hold for the time being.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you said you were on the border of Italy and Switzerland and such like that. And when the pandemic, you know, started, a little over a year ago, or even more so for you guys, because in Europe it was a little before us.
Yeah.
Italy was really bad for a long time there. But what's it like kind of now? And, you know, what's the outlook on your normalcy of life getting back to somewhat normal for like shows or, you know, the public? What's it like out there?
Nobody really knows right now. And it's very different from country to country, from region to region. We do live on the border, but the borders are closed. So we cannot cross and Italians cannot cross in. And that's kind of weird because we live here and we're used to cross every week, right? So there is also a lot of people that work here or there. And it's something that is very European, you know, you just go from country to country and like on a weekly basis. And, you know, being so separated from one another, it's just weird for us. And, I don't know. It was kind of strange because I was touring with Darkest Hour as a fill-in guitar player in February 2020 when this all started in Italy and Germany. So I had to finish the tour and then fly back and land in Milan, Italy. And that's when I first saw the masks and, you know, this news that there was the first time that I heard it. And I've been touring for a while and I come back home and everybody was wearing masks and talking about this virus from China and everything. And that's where it kicked in. I felt like, okay, there's something very weird here. And it all started. And like from that day, 2 weeks later, all the borders were shut down and closed. And life changed forever for us.
Yeah.
Because it's just... we're stuck at home for 1 year, and I don't know if shows are gonna happen. Probably, you know, small open air shows are gonna be there during the summer, mm-hmm. in most places.
Yeah, because like, most European festivals have kind of been canceled already. You know, that were maybe rescheduled for this year and everything. But so you say. The borders are closed. Are some borders for some countries open? Or are they all just kind of closed and you guys are all kind of in your little pockets now?
I think they are pretty much all closed. I'm not sure about it, though. I mean, the ones that are next to us are all closed. Yeah. But you know, like, if there are gonna happen, you know, if there are gonna be shows during the summer, it's gonna be, you know, maximum 200, 300 people in the open air, and it's, you know, being seated, wearing masks. I guess it's gonna be like that, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Even by the time this comes out, which is a couple of weeks from now, things could be different. You never know. But like, there are certain countries and certain parts of the world that have quote unquote beat the virus, and they're opened up, and they're not. I don't want to know. I don't know if they're back to normal life, but they're definitely back to shows and live events. It seems I've seen a lot of festivals going on, and like, I want to say Australia and some other kind of small Asian island countries.
New Zealand, I guess.
Yeah, New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't really know about what's happening in other, you know, countries. Well, how is the situation there in Florida?
Well, that's what I was asking, because you know, certain our state lines are open, so that I kind of associate, like, you know, country borders over in Europe to state lines for us.
Okay.
But certain states are open. Like, certain states have gone open. Most recently, Texas and Mississippi are like, we're going to start doing concerts. No mask, no social distancing, nothing. We're going back to kind of normal, it sounded like, is what they want to do. And so a lot of people are upset about that. And, you know, there's other states like California, New York, and other places, like even I think some places in Canada are still in lockdown. And it seems really strange. It seems in some areas you're being told some stuff, you know what I mean? And then like where I live in Florida, it's, our governor was Republican, and he was more aligned with like Trump's plan. So our state has been open for quite some time, and not like where we're having shows and stuff like that, but that's coming back. Like, there are, events are happening, like, two miles away, actually, there's an open air festival that's going to happen on the weekends. And I think some of the bands are like Newfound Glory will play one weekend, and then Sugar Ray will play another weekend. So they're going to have like bands playing down the street here, open air, by the river. And, you know, so we're there, and it's just crazy that, you know, I don't know what to believe and what to side with, because I'm just living my life day to day. But I've lived my life day to day here in Florida, so I've seen what it's like if, I guess, restrictions elsewhere were kind of lessened. And I'm not saying that's what people should do or anything like that, but that's just like my reality. So it's crazy to hear other people's reality, because it's so different than what I'm living in, no matter what I believe or think. You know what I mean? It's just, it's crazy.
Absolutely. I guess it's very different everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in Europe, like every country is behaving totally different from the next. So,
is it political based over there in Europe? Like, is it as politically based on like their stance on like masks, no masks? You know, the virus is a problem. It's really not a problem. Like, is it based politically like that?
I guess that, I mean, you gotta wear a mask everywhere in Europe right now. And it's more based on the number of cases. I mean, if you had no cases for a couple of months, maybe it's going to change. But I feel like right now, most of the European countries are in the same situation. Like, I mean, the cases are going down where I live, but next to us, there are some great spikes in Italy. So you never know how it's going. Mm-hmm. Nobody really can understand what is the trend. It's just weird.
It's just been one of those, like, it's got to be one of the most frustrating things for, like, for everyone in the world to have dealt with at the same time. It's never really kind of happened.
It's crazy. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
So nuts.
And it was even crazier at the beginning, because there are, you know, the country that is next to you, they are taking action on it, and they are having big problems. Why did it take so long for other countries to react? Because of the cases, because maybe, you know, it took longer for other areas to be affected. In danger.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I think, and a lot of that is, you know, we had that kind of issue here, whereas, you know, as Italy was going crazy, all of a sudden New York started going crazy. And then, you know, then
people started raising the eyebrow over here. And then next thing you know, it started popping up all over. And, you know, it did get, it was scary for a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not saying I'm not like an anti-believer or anything like that. It's just for a while, it was definitely scary. And, you know, like we didn't leave our houses. That was like the first time, like we stopped going to work and like, you know, and we stopped going outside and stuff. And like, I was like, okay, this is kind of strange. But then, you know, I guess when the grocery store opened back up and we had to go into the grocery store and, you know, it's just like, oh, it's like it's like being in a weird movie, like outbreak movie. And like, you're being told to stay in the bunker. And then all of a sudden, like you start venturing out and you're like, oh wait, I'm not bursting into flames. I'm not dying instantly. And then, you know, I just got used to being out in public and I'm used to it. Like, I've been in public the entire time now. And it's like, I go to dinner in restaurants and there's other people in the restaurants. It's not, you know, and it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy that I'm living a different life than I guess you would live.
Yeah.
And other people. Absolutely. It's really insane.
Yeah. Here there are no open restaurants. I mean, you cannot go, you can just order in and do it at home.
So for you, is that like, what is that? What do you think? And I don't want to get your personal opinion on the situation, but like, how does it make you feel that, do you know that you can't do certain things, but like the country over, or like me, I'm doing the things that you maybe want to do, or like, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I don't feel bad about that. I mean, I feel like there has to be a reason for it. I mean, maybe you're not in the same type of danger
in
your area. I mean, I don't really know. I used to feel like very depressed at the beginning of things because everything that was scheduled just suddenly was canceled. Right. And we had to redo everything. The world stopped. And it was weird for us at that point, but then I got somehow used to it. And right now I'm always trying to, you know, get the best out of it and try to be creative and just work as much as possible in a positive direction. And I feel like many people are doing the same here.
That's cool.
So I'm also pretty positive that it's not going to last forever. So. Sometime, well,
yeah. hopefully,
we're gonna see the sunlight.
Yeah, they announced. I don't know if you're familiar with like you know everything that goes on in the United States, and especially I don't know how familiar with like early metalcore, early 2000s scene life in the United States. But they released the new dates and the new lineup for the Furnace Fest.
I've seen that
festival, and a lot of people are you know. Excited on one hand, and then there's another camp that's like, how can you, we're in the middle of a pandemic, there's that crowd. So it's crazy, and again, it's crazy to see both sides of it. But
and that's in Alabama, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
I've been to Alabama. I'm not necessarily.
Not to the festival, I mean.
Oh, no. It was early 2000s. Unfortunately, I was a little younger, and I wasn't, you know, I didn't travel all over like I do now. Okay. For that kind of stuff, but I definitely plan on going if it can. If they have this festival, I'm gonna go. But I'm not necessarily gonna be worried. I'll wear a mask if depending on whatever I have to do at that time, I'll do. I'm not worried about it. I'll mask up. I won't mask. Whatever I have to do. I shouldn't say whatever I have to do. I'm not gonna do whatever I have to do. But I'll do some things to go to the festival.
Right.
But yeah, man. So I guess we're kind of running the end here. Congrats again on the record, even though it just came out 2 days ago. And hopefully, by the time fans and people listen to it, they've been living with it for a month or so. So hopefully, it's just continued to get better and better for you guys. And man, hopefully, we can get some shows going, and hopefully, you can get traditional, you know. Schedule going for rock
release,
for
really hope so
releases
I really hope so to finally get to the States and play some shows because it's about time.
Let's let's try to manifest a booking agent or a person to help fella and the Dreamshade guys to cross the pond yet again. It's been 7-8 years, so And we'll,
I mean, we did go to every other, I don't know, continent.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, the right time to come back to the States.
Well,
we've never been to Canada, so also that's gonna be a first.
Usually, if you can get into one country, you can get in the other one. Yeah. So yeah, you're gonna be pretty good. But yeah, man. Well, thanks for spending this Sunday with me. I know it's a little later for you over there. It's a little earlier, or not early. It's like, you know, it was 12 when we started, so it was whatever. But I appreciate your time, fella, and hopefully we can do this again next time in person when you're, you know, in the States. So
absolutely.
So once again, congrats on the Pale Blue Dot release. And again, if you have listened this far, don't forget to get yourself in the running for the copy of their new album on CD. We're going to be giving away. So again, thanks, man. Have a great rest of the year, I guess.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be with you.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're going to be like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.